Welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday, to get you through this coronavirus crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. Right here on the Jason Ranch on AM 770 KTTA. Streaming live on the KTTA smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. Pierce County's executive says the phase-in approach is unrealistic. He's correct. We'll tell you why. Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin's going to stop by to discuss reopening their economy safely. Plus, we're going to jump into the weird defense of Joe Biden's racism. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Pierce County?
Everyone is ready to get into phase two of the reopening of our economy here in Washington State. Pretty much every single person out there who's listening to me right now is ready. Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer is ready. But he's not hopeful that it's going to happen, unfortunately. Talking to King 5, he says, we could do it right now if you would let us.
The people of Pierce County have demonstrated that they're ready to responsibly and safely move to phase two.
Unfortunately, Governor Jay Inslee doesn't believe that. He doesn't think that Pierce County is ready. It's not going to happen under the plan that Governor Jay Inslee has put out there. He is a political coward who doesn't actually use science or data to inform his decision making. He doesn't understand the science nor the data that he sees. Because under his guidance, they say counties are only eligible to apply for phase two if they've got fewer than 10 new cases per 100,000 residents over a 14-day time span. The CDC right now, the report came out last night, suspects that the death rate to coronavirus is around 0.03%. Now, that's likely going to change in either direction, and not everyone agrees with that. But that's what the CDC is putting out there. What we do know is here in Washington State that of the folks who have died, 90% of the deaths are over the age of 60. 90% of the deaths over the age of 60. Over 60% of the deaths happened at elder care facilities. That's important data. That data is incredibly important. And it should be used to instruct our policy making, our decisions. Unless you treat data and science like the enemy when it doesn't tell you what you want it to tell you. It is not feasible with a virus as contagious as the coronavirus to say a county the size of Pierce, which has almost a million people, should go 14 days with under 90 infections overall. Every day. That's just not feasible. Because we know how contagious the coronavirus is. Just because it's contagious, of course, doesn't mean it's going to kill you. The vast majority of people who get the coronavirus will not die. Some people will get hit harder than others, like a flu would hit you and knock you out. The coronavirus can do the same thing. Other folks can get it and be asymptomatic the entire time, not even realizing they had it. That's the truth for the vast majority of Washingtonians. And yet we're not using that data, that scientific fact, to inform our decision-making. And as a result, Executive Dammeyer is saying, look, this is just not feasible.
And that's going to be really difficult for the people of Pierce County to meet that anytime soon. But certainly not by June 1st.
That's unfortunate for a lot of small business owners who are dying to reopen. Small business owners who are desperate to reopen. Bo Irvin, for example, he's hoping against hope that come June 1st or 2nd, he's going to be able to open his barber shop in South Tacoma.
I took the time to paint inside my shop a little bit, repainted the roof. I have some new barber chairs coming in. I look forward to having a re-grand opening. Man, I want to get back. I love it. This is what I do. I work with my hands. I like to create and make people look good and feel good all over again.
You can tell by the tone of his voice that he wants so desperately to reopen. This is what he does for a living. There are so many people out there, regardless of the industry that they work, they want to get back to work. They want to get back to work. They want to be able to pay their employees. They want to be able to put food on their own tables. And so many people at this time that they're being told no, a lot of these people aren't getting their unemployment checks. Some have gone 10 weeks without so much as a notification from the Employment Security Department. that they even are going to send them a check. And so these businesses that are desperate, they're not going to get a reprieve. They're not going to go into phase two in Pierce County next week.
My business model is it's not just business, it's personal. You know what I'm saying? We become friends beyond clients.
Okay, that's a little much. I don't need to be your best friend. Just cut my hair, man.
I'm in need of friends, so I like this barber. I might go visit this guy so I have a new friend.
I don't want any friends. I just want my hair cut. And you know what? I have a good relationship with my barber, Tyler, over at Valiant in Seattle. We don't text.
You need friends.
We don't. I need so much stuff in my life that I'm never going to get. At this point, all I want is a haircut.
You don't think you need like one barber friend who you can hang out with on the weekends?
I don't want to hang out with barbers.
Why?
Because I would be the insufferable person who's always constantly talking about hair. And he'd be like, look, man, I don't need to talk about hair outside of work. Because I'm the same way. I don't want to talk about radio or even politics outside of work with friends. Like, I'm done. I'm like, I just talk for 3 hours. What are you asking me my opinion about Jay Inslee? Listen to the podcast, man.
So the only topic that you talk about outside of work on the weekends is hair, so you can't have a barber friend? You don't talk about anything else?
I talk sometimes soccer.
Yeah.
But not with friends, because none of my friends like soccer.
You don't have friends. That's why.
I have friends.
Name one.
Doctor.
Doctor?
Yeah.
You call your friend Doctor?
That's his first name.
It's his first name. It's not the title?
No, it's Doctor.
What's his last name?
Pepier.
Pepier? Is that French for pepper?
No, that's his name.
Doctor.
He's not French. He's from Bellevue.
Doctor Pepier.
Yeah.
Why did his parents name him Doctor? Surely you've had that conversation. Why, hey, man, you got a weird name. Why are you named Doctor?
I thought it would not be culturally sensitive for me to bring up that question.
Because he's French?
He's white, but still, he's born in Bellevue.
Pepier, huh?
Yeah.
Diet Dr. Pepier? Like the one that's right in front of you?
No, that's Dr. Pepper.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, his name is Dr. Pepier.
Gotcha.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
Meanwhile, King County is pretty much in the exact same place as Pierce County, and that's unfortunate. And if you think you're moving into this next phase in King County, my friends, you're not. I'm sorry. I am sorry. Because the King County Health Officer, Dr. Jeff Duchin, that dude who pushes heroin injection sites, he thinks that's the right move. He doesn't think we're ready. He doesn't think we're ready to move forward. He tells King 5.
So I'm concerned that we haven't really come to a stable point in phase one yet. In order to see exactly where we are before we move on. I'd like to see a little bit more stability, and I'd like to see disease incidence or numbers of new cases decrease a bit further if possible.
You'd like to see it if possible. What if it's not possible? What if when we're dealing with a high contagion rate of the coronavirus, where again, remember, the vast majority of people with the coronavirus will not die. They might feel crummy, but they're not going to die, okay? If it's not possible, then what? And at what point do you determine whether or not that's possible? The problem with all of this, and the reason why so many people are getting so frustrated, is they keep changing the goalpost. When they originally talked about the shutdown, and the vast majority of us, even on this station, listeners, were on board at the beginning because we understood we wanted to flatten that curve because we didn't want to overwhelm our hospitals. That would have been a catastrophe. That was the guidance we were getting from the White House. It was the guidance we were getting from the governor. And I feel like, regardless of your political positions, we were generally in agreement. Maybe we disagreed on how long it would last and the severity, but generally people understood. Well, we went along with the stay-at-home order. We flattened that curve. We very clearly flattened that curve, not just in Washington, but in every county here. And how do we know that? Because none of our hospitals have been overrun. We spent all that money getting these two pop-up hospitals, these field hospitals set up at Angels of the Wind Resort, at CenturyLink. They were never used. They were never used. That's good. I am glad that they were never used. But now that we achieved that goal, you've changed it. Now we have to make sure no one gets the coronavirus, period. That's not going to happen, and we don't have that kind of standard for anything. It's not reasonable. And you can tell the difference in counties when King 5 speaks to people on the street. On the one hand, you hear from folks over in Snohomish County and Pierce County saying, I want to get back to work. We need to get back to work. But then when you go into King County, and when I say King County, I really mean Seattle, you hear this.
I'd rather be safe than sorry.
This has been surreal. I'm totally supportive of the restrictions that we have, even though I don't like them.
Well, how about this? Start by staying indoors, because there's no reason for you to go outside. And if you'd rather be safe than sorry, then be safe rather than sorry. If we safely and responsibly reopen a business, you do understand you're not compelled to visit those businesses. You're not going to be compelled to go to that barbershop. You're not going to be compelled to go to that church. You're not going to be compelled to do anything you don't want to, except wear a mask, apparently. You don't have to participate. You can stay at home. And if you are in a specific demographic that is at a higher risk of mortality associated with the coronavirus, you shouldn't be going out. You shouldn't. If I was in that demographic of someone who the chances are, if I were to get it, I even had like a 20% chance of mortality, I would stay indoors. That would be a smart move. But I'm not. And so many people who are listening to me right now are not in that position. So explain to me the data, the science, that says a salon can't open safely. A drive-in movie theater can't operate because someone might have to use the restroom and we're not allowed to use bathrooms anymore. It doesn't make any sense. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, but in Seattle, for example, they've decided on a city level, despite the guidance coming from the governor's office, on a city level, they have decided that they're going to close tennis courts. Right? They're courts, not fields or pitches.
Yeah, good. Just courts. Good job. That was very athletic sounding of you.
Yeah. The tennis ball. They've decided that they're not going to open up their courts. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. The good news is, sorta, they're going to start opening up places of worship. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Governor Jay Inslee today announced new guidance for the reopening of places of worship, be it a church, a mosque, a synagogue. And they're different in phase one and phase two. For phase one,
for in-person services, the following activities with the appropriate health guidance can be safe to begin
okay,
with.
Okay, come on, spit it out.
First one, in phase one, and
we
essentially
got it. No,
this
said
would
that.
Be allowed throughout the
come
state
on.
Of Washington.
Yeah,
now,
I know, not
right
Idaho.
Now.
We're in Washington.
So right now in phase one, outdoor religious services can be held on the organization's property or immediately adjacent, up to 100 individuals using face coverings. And congregations will be able to do this multiple times during the day.
Awesome. Unless you don't have that kind of space. Because there are a lot of churches, be it in Everett or Seattle or Tacoma, that don't have the space to have 100 people outside. So I'm not entirely sure I understand how this is a big win. Unless you are in a county that's already into phase number two and you can start doing a little bit more. Because in phase number two, you're given some more leeway.
Indoor religious services will be held at 25% capacity of the facility or 50 individuals, whichever is less, again, with face coverings.
Whichever is less. Okay. This is not that big of a win. It is a considerable win in the context of what he was doing before, which is ignoring the issue. It took the president to issue a threat for him to start to move. Will this be enough? I don't know. We talked earlier to the Family Policy Institute of Washington, their executive director, Mark Melosha, former state representative. He was on the show to talk about it. It sounds like they're getting ready to back a lawsuit here. And you know what? I hope they sue. And I think they're going to win. Because we have a governor who has decided that he's going to pick and choose the winners. And he has decided to err against helping out the businesses or the communities that very clearly have a carve-out for protection under our constitutional rights. Remember, he's saying that going to church, going to temple, going to a mosque, going to wherever it is you worship is not essential. He told us going to a gun shop is not essential. Now, you have the right to pray at a church. You have a constitutional right to own a weapon. He said those businesses, those communities, those services are not essential. However, what is essential? Going to get baked at a pot shop. That's essential. Going to a liquor store, essential. Going for an abortion service, that's essential. Those are essential. But not going to temple. He is choosing to restrict the services provided by places of worship when they have a constitutional right to engage in said worship in those services. I hope he loses. I can't wait until he loses. The good news is, all across the country, when these are going in front of judges, judges tend to side with the plaintiffs. Whether it's about churches or gun rights or the stay-at-home orders in general, look what happened in Wisconsin. They tend to go with the plaintiffs. Now, in this case, he's also forcing you. He's not forcing you to wear a mask when you go to a grocery store or Best Buy or wherever. But if you were to go to a church, if you were to participate in any of these services, you are being compelled, according to the rules, to wear a mask. If you're on a choir, you definitely have to.
Now, there are certain parts of our services we need to defer for the moment, including some choirs. Singing in the congregation is allowed, but with face coverings. And this is because the science has been pretty clear on this.
Science.
That this virus is transmitted, of course, through our exhalations. And the louder we project our voices, the farther this virus travels.
Oh, okay. But I mean, not more than 6 feet, right? Exhalations. Do you think he can spell that?
Can I or can he?
Well, I know you can't, but do you think he can?
No. If I can't, he can't.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The economy.
Finally, the Washington Department of Labor and Industries, L&I, they have become weaponized. We talked about it in the first hour. If you missed my interview with State Representative Chris Corey, please download the podcast and listen to it, because it's important. In fact, if you text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, that's 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link. Because L&I, under the guise of an emergency declaration coming from Governor Jay Inslee, without any debate, without any discussion, without any conversation that's meaningful to us whatsoever, he decided to weaponize L&I and give them the right to go business to business, making sure that they're shut down. And if they're not, that business can be hit with a fee starting at around $10,000. A punishment starting at around $10,000. Now, why is that especially outrageous? It's really simple. Right now, Governor Inslee is telling you can't go to work. You can't make a living. He is not giving you your unemployment checks. He's giving Nigerian scam artists hundreds of millions of dollars in an attack that we could have very easily foreseen. Very easily could have foreseen that. We're paying them, but we're not paying the listeners right now who are going now 10 weeks without an unemployment check. So now, on top of closing down the businesses and not giving employees any money, money that they're owed, their own money back in a system that they funded, you're now going to charge a $10,000 fee, a punishment, via L&I. Is that a good look, Governor Jay Inslee? Is that a good look for you? Trying to destroy a business? Think about why a business is opening right now. Think about it. With a couple exceptions, these businesses aren't opening because they want to make a political statement. Some are. Most of them are not. They're operating because they need to make a living. And you're telling them at a time where they're desperate, that you're going to completely destroy them. And if it's not L&I, it's Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, who's sending these threatening letters to businesses. He feels real tough, Bob Ferguson, who's a dweeb who doesn't normally get to feel tough, except when he sends over a sternly worded threat in a letter. Oh, man, he feels tough then. He feels really, really tough then. It is so alarming. And what's worse was the governor decided to do this on his own. He didn't work with the Republicans in the House or the Senate. He didn't even let them know. Chris Corey, state representative from Yakima, he found out because some people in his district were emailing him. And then he looked it up, and that's when he found out that this was happening. This governor is acting on his own, and I believe that this is an abuse of power. This, I think, is an abuse of power. And of course, he's not making any mention of it. He didn't talk about it, the governor, during today's press briefing. I don't know if he ended up getting asked about it, but it certainly wasn't a part of his normal 101 on things we learned today. None of it. He's keeping this quiet for a reason. It's because it's a really, really bad look. If you want to text me, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my latest blog, 1-800-465-8770. We still got a lot to get to on the show. Coming up in a bit, Paris Denard from the RNC is going to stop by to talk about the "you ain't black" bigotry coming from Joe Biden that some Democrats are actually defending. But coming up next, Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin on what's going on in Everett and how they can reopen right here on KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Like so many other cities, Everett has been hit very hard by the coronavirus. Now, as a consequence, the city is having to cut jobs and services. Joining me on the line to discuss is Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin. Mayor Franklin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
It is kind of weird in that, you know, a best case scenario is losing about $14 million in your budget, and that's obviously not a best case scenario. That could obviously grow. So how is the city addressing that?
It has been a challenge. You know, we had our finance team working on this early on to try to estimate what the losses are going to be. You know, a city's budget is made up of B&O tax, sales tax, utility tax, and some other fees. And so with, you know, the mitigation efforts, our economy has been shut down, and we are struggling with that loss. So we did a hiring freeze. We cut travel and training and as many M&O expenses as we could, but we definitely had to take some more significant cuts.
What are some of those significant cuts?
Well, we furloughed 60 employees as of May 3rd. We implemented early on in April a voluntary separation program. We had 55 or so employees take part in that. We had permanently eliminated 21 of those positions. Once we implemented that and we kind of saw how many people took part in that program and how many positions could be permanently eliminated, then we had to move to layoffs. We've laid off 16 full-time and 65 part-time employees. So currently we're down by about 117 full-time equivalents. So this has impacted recreation most heavily. So recreation programs are closed. Our senior center, a lot of layoffs in our library. And we tried to focus the areas of reductions on areas that were closed anyway due to the stay home, stay healthy order. But it's certainly significantly going to be a change for our residents and the level of services we can provide as a city.
So with those changes that you made, about how much of a chunk of that $14 million did you get out of it?
About $3.5 million.
Yeah, so there's a lot more.
There's a lot more. So we are looking at all other areas of reduction that are not layoffs that we can possibly make. But, you know, our city has been facing a structural deficit for years. So this is kind of on top of an already financially challenged city. So, you know, we're adjusting as much as possible, but trying to let our residents know that the services that we can offer are going to be much more limited this year and most likely into next year as well.
Just joining me, we're talking with Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin about the $14 million deficit. We hope it stays at $14 million. We hope that number is actually wrong, and at the end of the day, they're able to make this all back. But obviously, that means there are a lot of jobs being cut and services being impacted. Chris Dugovich is someone who works with the labor union that represents some of the city employees that have been let go from their positions. He did an interview with Q13 last week, basically saying, look, the budget cuts that you're talking about now should have been addressed years ago. Is that a fair concern? Is that a fair criticism? Which, by the way, is not due to you. You were not in office at the time that he's talking about.
You know, I think the earlier you can act when you anticipate kind of these deficits, the better position you are, which is why we acted early in this crisis. I know that other cities haven't moved to layoffs yet, but I believe other cities are facing kind of the same mm-hmm. crisis that we are financially. I think that our city chose in the last recession to maintain a high service level, which our residents have benefited for, but that isn't possible to maintain. Other cities have stopped running the same level of programs because they're not affordable for government to run. And so I think we're having to make some of those tough decisions now.
Has this sort of highlighted the areas that should have been cut anyway? The sort of the very glaring issues that you say, okay, obviously we don't want to be put in a position we have to make these cuts, but this one totally makes sense.
You know, we don't have a lot of program cuts that totally make sense. They're all programs that are beloved by mm-hmm. by our community. They love us offering these programs, and we love being able to host them. But I think it does lead to the question of what services should government provide for its residents, what should be government-funded, and what should come in another way. Very few yeah. cities have a petting zoo. You know, we've been having a beautiful animal farm every summer, but is that something we can afford long term? And so the other areas that, you know, the big areas of service that we have that are expensive, such as our library or transit comes out of a different bucket. It's a enterprise fund, mm-hmm. but, you know, golf courses, it's just kind of a question of how many of these should be city sponsored versus and publicly funded by taxpayer dollars versus maybe having these services offered another way in your community.
So a big news item that happened this morning, Boeing announced that they're cutting over 12,000 jobs all across the country. We're not entirely sure yet, I don't think, the local impact. We obviously know it's going to impact the greater Snohomish County area. Have you guys decided yet what can be done in a situation like that? Obviously, Snohomish County's biggest employer is Boeing.
Yeah, we are an aerospace community. Boeing is our largest employer. We have, and all of its partner companies, it really is a huge part of our economy. So we're certainly sad to see those layoffs as well. I wish I could say I was surprised. Boeing and aerospace in general has just been hit hard by this mm-hmm. pandemic. And so I think that, you know, we're going to remain a Boeing community, but certainly that is part of the equation as we're looking to the losses that we are estimating here in our city.
So are you pushing to reopen the economy faster than the phase and approach would allow you to?
You know, it's such the balancing act that cities and counties and the states across the country are doing right now between public safety and the economy is incredibly challenging. And I was one of the first cities I think in Washington to direct to close a few days before the governor mm-hmm. issued his stay home, stay healthy order. And now I think our small businesses are really suffering, and it's we've been in conversations with the governor's team and have, you know, articulated ways that we believe, you know, small businesses can reopen safely and look forward to being able to reopen that more of our economy safely and as quickly as possible for all of us to recover. But I think that balance isn't going to go away, right? This mm-hmm. balance between health and safety, I think we need to keep it front and center this entire time.
Well, then my last question for you is, you know, has the governor been receptive to that? Because, you know, obviously what we know now about the virus is much different than what we learned, 10 weeks ago. Obviously, we're still learning more, but the data here in Washington suggests 90% of those who have unfortunately passed away as a result are over the age of 60. And anyone who's been taking the position, and it's mostly been Republicans who are saying, hey, maybe we should start reopening the economy and use this data to inform policies that will protect folks who are most at risk while loosening some of the restrictions so we can have businesses starting to open up and get our economy, going again for the most part. And we heard this past weekend where he's basically saying that folks who hold that position want to see older people die, which is just, it's a horrible revision of what people are saying. It sounds like it's kind of what you're saying, which is we should be able to sensibly and responsibly reopen some businesses using the data that we have. Is there a difference?
I think that this has become politicized in a way that it really isn't. You know, the disease doesn't care if you're Republican or Democrat, and a business that's struggling doesn't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. And one of our council members on Iowa City Council happens to be Republican, and he serves on our health district board and has done an outstanding job of ensuring the health of our residents. And I know one of our Democrat council members has done an outstanding job of advocating for businesses. So I think that, you know, different, you know, platforms have made this a very political issue when in reality our community doesn't see it that way, our residents don't see it that way, and our local electeds don't see it that way. I think that we can and protect health and safety in our community, and I think we can focus on economic recovery, and those things are not are not in conflict. The fact that I care about business does not mean I don't care about people, and the fact that I care about people doesn't mean I don't care about business. I care about both,
and I'm glad you say that.
I continue to advocate for both.
I'm glad you say that, because that's from regardless of who's saying it. That's the only message I've heard coming from Democrats and from Republicans, simply saying, "Yeah, we want to protect as many lives as humanly possible, but we also don't want to bankrupt businesses, and we have to come up with an approach that can serve both." And so I hate this idea that I could hear what you just said, and if a Republican said it, with respect, I feel like some folks would say that you don't care about older people, that you want to see them die, which is, of course, absolutely ludicrous. And so I'm glad that you're taking a sensible approach to this, like so many other people, regardless of whether or not they identify as a Republican or a Democrat. We've been talking with Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin. Thank you so much for stopping by again. I wish it was under better circumstances that we had our first interview, but I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Over the weekend and yesterday, progressive media outlets continue to downplay the Joe Biden remarks that you're not black if you don't vote for him. Or excuse me, you ain't black if you don't vote for him. While some did condemn him, for the most part, he was defended by the media. They claimed he was simply joking. But the truth is, this revealed what many Democrats truly believe, not just about African Americans, but all minorities. Joining me on the line with his thoughts, Paris Denard. He's a senior communications advisor for Black Media Affairs over at the RNC, and he's got an editorial in USA Today. Paris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
So, obviously, he's with this line that he was just joking. Maybe he was joking, but it felt like it revealed what they really believe.
Well, it's very clear to anyone who listened to that interview that Joe Biden was not joking, and that we need to stop calling these instances gaffes. We need to stop giving him cover. We, meaning the American people, Democrats, the mainstream media, it's time for us to call Joe Biden out for what he is, and it's a bigot. His comments that he made are bigoted, and it's a history. This is not an isolated incident. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden has a long history of making bigoted comments against not just Black Americans, but many minority groups, and it is offensive. It's wrong. And as someone who has spent 44 years of his career in public life, one would think that he would understand the importance of being respectful, that he would understand the importance of being encouraging and uplifting and not demeaning and demoralizing and offensive. But that's who Joe Biden is at his core. And the last thing I think that Black America needs is a 77-year-old man sitting in his basement in quarantine trying to tell Black Americans whether or not they are black just because we don't fit into his prescribed notion of what it means to be an American by voting for one party over the other, or in his case, voting for him.
Yeah.
It was offensive to not only Republicans, but it was offensive to Black Democrats, those Black Democrats who are not looking to vote for Joe Biden and might have been supporting Amy Klobuchar or supporting Bernie Sanders. All across the board, I agree with the people like Bob Johnson, the founder of BET, who said mm-hmm. that he should spend the rest of his campaign apologizing to every black person that he meets.
What I find interesting about this is, even though this is a new story in a general sense, this idea that you're not black enough has been used against black conservatives for decades, and you don't even have to go back that far. I mean, look at how Condi Rice was treated, Dr. Ben Carson. Same thing, that they're essentially sellouts or Uncle Toms because they're choosing to vote Republican.
Well, that's why I believe that, first of all, your assessment is 100% true. We just saw a PBS documentary on aired on PBS about Justice Clarence Thomas, and he, along with other modern conservative Republicans like myself, Katrina Pearson, and others, have faced this ridicule. That's why I believe that what Joe Biden did was on purpose. It was specific. It was targeted, and I feel that it was voter suppression. It was an effort to suppress the vote for those free-thinking, independent-minded black Americans on both sides of the political aisle who may not be buying into Biden's bigotry, Biden's view of America, Biden's plan for the future. And so anybody who dares think outside the box, outside the liberal Democrat Joe Biden box, they label them as Uncle Toms. They label us as not connected to our community. And so I believe what Joe Biden was trying to do is to encourage those people through a dog whistle, those people who are looking outside of himself, looking outside of Joe Biden, and telling them, you know what, you don't vote for me, you're not black, you don't have a connection to your community, don't even bother. And that's offensive, and it's sad that that's where we are in 2020 with the Democrat Party.
Paris Denard is joining me on the line. He's the Senior Communications Advisor for Black Media Affairs over at the RNC. He's got an editorial on this Joe Biden quote-unquote gaffe when it was really a bigoted truth that he believes. It's over in USA Today. Why do black voters still overwhelmingly vote for Democrats? I know that there's this belief that because of the historic unemployment numbers under President Trump, specifically benefiting the African-American community, that there's hope that he'll be able to peel off some of that support. But, I mean, he's clearly not going to get the support from the black community that he deserves. So why is it with these feelings that Joe Biden has and is happy to put out there that black voters don't step back and say, okay, that he's kind of taking us for granted?
Well, I mean, look, it remains to be seen. I think there's a new day in America. There's a tide shifting. The tides are turning. And I believe that there is a generational shift. I think there's a political shift happening. I think when you have people like State Representative Vernon Jones, who is a black Democrat out of Georgia, who said, I'm going to remain a Democrat. I am committed to my community. But I believe that because of the things that President Trump has done, I'm going to be voting and endorsing him. I think when you look at State Representative out of Detroit, Michigan, Karen Whissett, and how she stood with the president in terms of his work for COVID-19 and how it disproportionately affected her community in Detroit and other communities of colors across this country. She's remaining as a Democrat, but has been very supportive of the president and proudly doing so. So I think that when you look at the total spectrum of where black Americans are, I think there's an awakening. Some are giving President Trump a look for the first time. Some are giving President Trump a look for the second time. But looking comparatively at the records of someone like Joe Biden, who's been MIA for the black community for the past 44 years, and President Trump, who's done so much, the list is like a laundry list of accomplishments of the black community in just four. I think we now have a candidate and a president who has given black people, the black community, something to vote for. Someone who has kept his promises and even done more than what he promised to do. And that is why it's different. You have a campaign that is engaging like never before with community centers and Black Voices for Trump. You have a Republican National Committee who's engaged under the leadership of Ronna McDaniel like never before, trying to earn and get the respect of the black community through the messaging, through the engagement, through the direct engagement to share and amplify the message of exactly what the Republican Party stands for, what the Republican Party wants to do, and what President Trump has done.
So I want to talk bigger picture then, because as much as I hope that you're correct in that, and that all of a sudden the black community is going to look at the results coming from President Trump and say, oh, you know what, maybe it's been wrong to go with these Democrats for so long. I look at folks like Maxine Waters, who's been in power for a very long time, who has absolutely done a disservice to her own community. and yet she's mm-hmm. still in power. And then I look outside of the African American community. I'm gay and Jewish. Gays and Jews generally vote Democrats, and that has not shifted in any meaningful way over the last decade or so. And, you know, I hear the whole idea of you got to sort of take what you can get, and it's going to happen in baby steps. But at some point, the baby steps aren't really all that important in winning elections. It's good. I like it that it's starting to change, but that's not necessarily how you win elections. How much of this is a long game?
I think I actually respectfully disagree with you. I think when you look at President Trump's impact to getting 8% of the black vote, when you look at how in certain districts, in certain areas mm-hmm. of the country where Hillary Clinton, if she had performed better with certain groups like the black community in certain districts, certain counties, she could have won the presidency. But it was because President Trump's 8% and the way he performed in places he did well. You look at the narrow victories in places like Georgia, with Governor Kemp, and the victories with DeSantis in Florida. The difference is made not by DeSantis getting, you know, 80% of the mm-hmm. black vote. He got enough of the black vote that peeled away from the Gillum, because he was against school choice, and Gillum was against school choice, and DeSantis was for it. If you look at California 25, a district that we just won on the backdrop of COVID-19, and with the president building a wall in Mexico, and you know, the governor of California being many times at odds with the president, you have the Republicans picking up California 25, flipped this seat that Hillary Clinton won by 7% that was occupied by a Democrat, and it was won by a Mexican American who's first generation. Mm-hmm. So I think that these incremental victories is what it takes, because they can make all the difference in this election.
I guess I'm impatient in a way, mostly because you know, I don't want 8%. I want it to jump to 27%, and then I want it to go to 52%. You know what I mean? And I hear you, and well, I think you're right on the in that way. When you're looking level, you're 100% correct that those incremental victories can lead to something. But, you know, just for big picture and symbolism's sake, I want more than 8% in the black community, and I want way more than that in every community.
Well, I tell you, President Trump will get more than 8% in 2020. And the polling is showing that he's polling at anywhere between 15, 20 to 36% currently. And so I believe the president will get much greater than 8%. And it's going to be the catalyst to what change on a macro level that you want. It starts with the engagement. It starts with the direct appeals, and it starts with having good policy and good candidates, and we have that in Donald Trump.
Yeah, and by the way, we have a president who will actually talk to the community, not talk at the community, but actually talk with
100%.
Them. 100%. We've been talking with Paris Dinard. Mm-hmm. His piece right now is at USA Today. Paris, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be on the show anytime.
Absolutely. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.